You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Today on the show, Matt and Ia Maliava transferring from Arkansas to UCLA. We'll react to that, plus Ethan Westerman in studio to share his takeaways from spring football practice. We'll also give our thoughts on the basketball roster, men and women, leading into the 2025-26 season. All of that and more, but first a word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
You know, when all the Nico Iamaliava news broke a week or so ago, I guess it's been closer to 2 weeks now, the thought that I had, Ethan, was that at some point in time, you cannot disassociate yourself from the fact that all of the reports say that it's the Iamaliava family, the father, maybe the agent, the handlers, if you will, that were, you know, mostly responsible for what was going on with Nico. And you can't disassociate that from the fact that Arkansas had a quarterback from the same family on the roster. And at what point would that potentially become an issue for the Razorbacks? Well, here we are, less than 2 weeks later, and Madden Iamaliava has fled the coop, so to speak. He has left Arkansas, transferred away, according to reports yesterday, and is going with his brother to UCLA. This, I don't know that I'm surprised by a whole lot anymore. Just things are so constantly evolving and changing, and players are making decisions that may have not made sense 5-10 years ago. But this one, I think, did surprise me a little bit, because maybe if he doesn't play this upcoming season and he transfers, okay, maybe I see that, but early enrolling somewhere and then early portaling out before you ever even have a chance to play a game there, of all the new trends and the new precedents that are being set in college football, here's one.
Yeah, certainly. And it's, I don't know, people are going to have to learn some way that just, like, I don't know, there's just an instant gratification, I think, that's needed right now. Or, like, not say people think it's needed right now, where everybody's just jumping ship, like, left and right, looking for what's best for in the moment. And I don't know, it's just, this was a guy who, you go to one practice, and number one, he's probably battling for the backup spot this year, probably battling. If not, then next spring, that was going to be probably the whole story, was him versus, you know, KJ Jackson battling for the actual starting spot. It just, it's like something that's right there for you in the SEC coming up very soon, and then jumps ship. And who knows the details behind, like, why, what all happened to get to this point. All I know is it's probably best that it happened right now. You know, you mentioned of all the new trends, the leaving after early enrolling for one semester is a new one. But, you know, the way I see it, you might as well get rid of somebody that isn't going to want to be a part of your future as early as you can, so they aren't in the equation. And I just think what stinks about all of this is that Grayson Wilson is an in-state kid who also early enrolled, who'd been committed to Arkansas for years now, and he early enrolls, and he is not even really getting to a lot of the times scrimmage in the with the third team, because it's Madden quarterbacking the third team, and he's just kind of watching. And it's like, for him, it feels like probably a whole semester of just, like, missed opportunity to work more with the team that he had been committed to for a while. And it's just like, I don't know, this whole situation reveals that there's a guy who, I mean, look at the recruiting rankings, and Grayson Wilson's pretty talented too. I don't know if he's, you know, Madden Iamaliava, you go to a practice and just his arm is phenomenal. It's like he stood out, but Grayson Wilson's clearly talented too. And he just, I don't know, it was like, came here and kind of probably was, if you watch the interview after the national signing day at his thing, and the guy brought up about them signing Madden earlier in the day, there was definite, you know,
surprise.
It was surprise, but yeah. I mean, it was not just surprise. It was like, disappointment too, because it was basically he got blindsided. He had no clue this was going to happen, and basically they had, according to him, they said they weren't going to do that, and then they did. And then you come up, you still stick with it. You come up and you are behind a guy who they recruited for way shorter than you, that you were committed to. You're from the state and you like the team, and then you just went a whole spring without getting to actually really work as much as he did. It just feels like, to me, that's the part of this whole situation that's the worst.
Well, as disappointed as he might be, or KJ Jackson, or any of the quarterbacks who didn't get as much practice time or reps as maybe they would have otherwise, the coaches have got to be very frustrated about this too, because they just spent 14 practices really, you know, pouring in and days in film study and whatever the case might be. They spent a long time pouring into this quarterback who now is going to take all of that and move over here to UCLA. So I think that there's a lot of frustration on multiple ends here. I don't know how you can call this anything but tampering. How is this not tampering? It's reported he's in the portal, and then 30 minutes later, it's reported that he's going to UCLA. I don't think you can put together the whole financial package and everything that needs to be done in that short amount of a time. It seems to me, and I may be totally wrong on this, but certainly the appearance of this says that he and Nico Iamaliava were a package deal for UCLA. I mean, does that sound wrong?
I mean, it's what happened.
Yeah.
Whether it sounds right or wrong, it's what happened. And I mean, this is a guy who...
And if you're UCLA, how desperate do you come off looking here? After he left you at the altar on signing day to go to Arkansas, you look very desperate here, I think, if you're UCLA. And those coaches who had a lot of egg on their face on signing day, and now 4 months later, you're taking them back as if nothing ever happened between the two sides.
Yeah, I mean, he basically came to Arkansas to get some workouts in. It's like he went and trained in Arkansas for a semester, and then he's doing what he planned to do all along. It's just like it's. I don't think that anybody, like you say, is this anything but tampering. Like, I mean, I think everybody just acknowledges at this point that tampering is just part of the game. I mean, it's just like it just happens.
It doesn't have to be.
It doesn't have to be. It's just where it's gotten, though, where it just is. Like, I mean, it's very much just coaches expected, I think. It's just you're having to retain your roster a lot of the time and fight against it. I mean, this is a guy who Bobby Petrino, when he talked to us a few weeks ago, was making comparisons to Lamar Jackson. Like, I mean, the excitement train was, I mean, it was there for Madden, Iamaliava, because those who went to practices, I mean, you just noticed. You're like, this guy is really good. Like, he's just got an arm, and he's just, yeah. It stinks because you could see how good he was, but I don't think you can put a price tag on wanting to be somewhere and being a good person to have in your locker room. I'm not saying that Madden Iamaliava wasn't a good person in the locker room, but there might be more there with the whole situation. Like you said, the other people at play with getting him to transfer, that makes it, even if the player himself isn't one, he's always going to have that voice in his head that could cause some disunity on a team by there being the prospect of him leaving. I just think, yeah, you probably dodge a bullet by losing somebody early who wasn't going to be there all along. Because if there's anything this teaches, it's that he was not going to be at Arkansas all along. It was just a little pit stop.
Do we know how long Arkansas recruited him
in high school? No clue. I mean, it couldn't have been long.
I don't remember his name ever being associated with Arkansas until signing day, when it was announced that he had flipped to play here.
Yeah. I mean, it had to be super, super short. Maybe there was some like connection that happened that gave it a longer time frame technically, but I mean, yeah, it was a signing day, like an actual surprise. Like, I don't think anybody saw it coming. And so, I mean, UCLA didn't even see it coming. There were reports this week with the whole, whenever they were talking with Nico, that this was, I mean, they got blindsided by it. So it's, you know, I think that if you're UCLA, I mean, just have a good time with this situation. I think it's funny. I saw a tweet yesterday that was like, we should play a week zero game, Tennessee versus UCLA at the Rose Bowl, and see which fan base has more there. I think that a lot of, it's funny because this whole situation, it's like trying to chase a bag according to reports. And what do you end up with? leaving, if you're, I'm talking about Nico at this point, you're starting quarterback at an SEC program with a huge fan base that benefits you for life. And then you just, I don't know. It's like, what are you doing here? It's now you're playing at UCLA. Get used to probably not many people in the stands.
They put a tarp up at the Rose Bowl to cover the empty seats during the UCLA football games. Where I was going with this about how long did Arkansas recruit Madden, it seems to me that character is not recruited like it used to be. You know, like used to, you would have so much time, and there was not a whole lot of recruiting transfers. You'd get a transfer every now and then. And so your recruiting would be the high schools, and you would get to know the kid, and you would get to know the kid's family, and you would get to know the people who are around him, his coaches, his friends, you know, are there other family members that are involved in this process? And you'd get to know them, and you would recruit character as much as you would recruit talent, or at least some teams would. And what I think has been lost now with the way things are done is that character is not recruited anymore. There were three guys in here last weekend who Arkansas was recruiting out of the portal, maybe four, but three committed. And you cannot tell me that they had enough time to vet the character of these players. Now, they may be good kids, good guys, come from good families. Don't, you know, I'm not going to pretend like, you know, like I know anything that they're not. But you don't have time to recruit that. It's like speed dating is what's going on now between college coaches and these players. And when you speed date, you know what happens? You break up a lot. And that's what's happening, I feel like. It's like there's no time to marinate relationships. It's all about how fast can we get you on campus? How fast can we get you a financial commitment that's agreeable to both sides? And how fast can we get you to sign? And I feel like whenever that is your primary objective, or maybe just the, maybe it's just the byproduct of how recruiting is done now, you're going to have issues like this. You're going to have issues like the UNLV quarterback who quits on his team in the middle of a potential playoff run. And you're going to have issues like what's going on with the Iamaliava brothers. I don't know how you fix this, but I just don't think this is sustainable. I think the XFL had a better model than college football has right now. College football, this model, this is not sustainable to continue to bring in players and then let them leave whenever they want to and then go out and scramble and find a warm body to bring in as their replacement for the next semester and then get rid of him. And come, I mean, it is a crazy carousel that college football is on right now. I don't know how you fix it. But what I do know is that you don't see this kind of crap happening in the NFL. You know, if the Jaguars want the Packers players, the GMs are talking to each other, and they're going to figure out a way to make that work for both sides. You don't have any of this stuff where a guy can get out of his commitment, have no financial penalty at all, it doesn't appear, and go to another school. This is chaos, and I don't know why anyone, a coach or a GM or anybody, would sign up for what's going on right now.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, everybody's having to do it because it's just the portal window. It's like, how else do you recruit the talent you need? You aren't going to have time. Like you said, it is going to be speed dating, but it's what you have to do. There's no other, what's the other solution right now? But I do think, yeah, it's like in this situation, like I don't want to attack Madden Maliava's character or anything because I have no clue. I don't know him one bit. I've never spoken a word or even heard him say a word. But it is one of those deals where it's like, you know, whenever you do sign him last second and it's a quick process, like what red flags were there? I mean, for the kid, were there any red flags? I mean, his brother's at Tennessee at that point. It's all the stuff that went down with the family went down within the past, you know, month or so. Like it's, you probably can't detect things like that. It's just, I don't even know how you vet right now the what you bring into your program. But I do know that it is definitely a model right now that just encourages kind of instant gratification, I think, for all sides. It's not just the players, it's the coaches and stuff too. I think that they have to get very quickly the whole system set up to where you have to very quickly get what you're going for. And you have your eyes set on what do we need, how are we going to get it as fast as we can, because this portal window closes pretty soon. It's just, yeah, it's tough. But everybody's just trying to get kind of the instant fix that they need.
Look, I'm sorry. You talked about character. It's a lack of character to leave a team after 4 months whenever you've committed to play for them. Stay there for at least a season. Unless there's something going on behind the scenes that we don't know about, and I don't think that's the case here, stay for a season. Then if you want to leave, leave. You fly in by night in the middle of spring practice or right when spring practice ends, that does not look good upon your character.
All I know is this is a 17 or 18-year-old who I guarantee did not make this decision for himself.
I agree with that.
So I'm not going to attack his character.
No. I'm not yeah. trying to, but I'm just saying the situation, him leaving, is just,
there's something bad somebody, going on. Yeah, somebody somewhere is not honoring commitment at all. Yeah, and that's... And it could be him, it could be the parent. I don't know who's to blame. All I know is it's not like a one-off story that's happened. I mean, it's getting a lot of publicity right now, this situation, because he's the brother of the Tennessee quarterback. Oh, my gosh. I mean,
No, I mean, how often, because I don't pay enough attention nationally. I wonder, have you seen other instances? And I know Arkansas had a freshman from Parkview who it didn't work out with him, and he left here during spring practice too. But I mean, do we know how often this is happening where players are coming in when they're supposed to be high school seniors, and then they're leaving in April and May? Happening a lot?
I have no clue. Like, national, all I know is that, I mean, like, you think about Arkansas, and since right now they just brought in Julian Neal to transfer from his is a little bit. That's a different situation where the Stanford coach got fired. He transferred from Fresno State at the end of the year. Arkansas brought in last year Danny Siley, who transferred to BYU and spent a semester there, and then they got him in the spring portal. It's just, you're seeing all the time people leaving after a semester, and it's like, it's just not a... This whole situation is getting a lot more publicity because it's the Tennessee quarterback and his brother, and basically they made a whole quarterback trade, UCLA and Tennessee did, and because the Tennessee brought in Joey Aguilar, who spent the semester at UCLA. It's just like... This one's getting a lot of publicity because it's super noteworthy, but this is happening a lot where people are going places for a semester and leaving. And I just think that short of that's just not commitment. It's who knows who's telling who to leave, and people are listening to a lot of voices. But across the board, whenever there's a situation where somebody's leaving after one semester, it seems to me like there's not a whole lot of commitment there.
I was talking to Christina in the press box the other day about this terrible TV show that my wife had me watch one time called Married at First Sight. That kind of what feels like what we're seeing in college football right now. It's like, oh, here you are. Here I am. We need a defensive tackle. You need a team. Boom.
Yeah. And I mean, I have no clue what goes on in these conversations. All I know is it has to happen very, very fast for you to get players on your roster. And Arkansas has been pretty good at getting players in that help them. You know, like, they filled some pertinent needs in the season in recent years, like, from the portal. But they've also just, like, they've lost, too. It's just, like, I almost now expect you bring somebody in as a freshman, it's, like, when do they leave? Not, like, are they going to leave? It's just, you know, how many people do you usually see come up through a whole signing class and stay with Arkansas? And here's the thing. The ones that do are usually from the state.
You know, Pittman, his staff, Juracek, the collective, they all catch a lot of crap for the inability to retain quality players. I don't see where any of them would be at fault for what happened here. This just seems like they got into a relationship with a party that probably was not very trustworthy in the first place.
Exactly. And so I think that for them, I mean, it's hard to fault the 17 or 18-year-old who came early. It's other people that are in his ear. And honestly, you'd be mad at the whole system that it can happen. Like, this situation can happen now in college football to where, I mean, like you said, this didn't just happen, like, within a 30-minute window where he's at UCLA.
You don't think?
If it did, then, I mean, we got to shake somebody's hand who got all the documentation and stuff that quick. I mean, what an impressive feat. But no, I think that you just more or less, I think, get mad at the whole system that this type of stuff just happens. And, but this is I just think this all comes back to this is what happens whenever everybody's looking for an instant what they need. There's the instant gratification is a real problem, I think, in all of college sports.
All right. So it was a bad week for the forecasters, a bad weekend. They missed the forecast on Saturday. They missed a tornado in Fayetteville on Sunday. But where I'm going with this is that they could have played a spring football game on Saturday afternoon. And I'm still kind of baffled that this thing got, you know, canceled when it did. Did it ever rain after about 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock Saturday morning? Because it was dry most of the rest.
It was a drizzle.
Like, I mean, I feel like they could have played the spring football game. I feel like they could have played baseball on Saturday. They didn't have to do the Friday doubleheader in retrospect. And I understand, you know, you're looking at models and forecasts and everything, and you got to make decisions, and it's a tough job. I understand that. But I think they could have done everything. I think you could have played a softball game on Saturday that got canceled. But they didn't get to play the spring game. I don't know that we would have learned a whole lot, even if they had. But you were out there for the majority, if not all, of the 14 practices, and you wrote something on our website this morning, your takeaways from spring practice. Kind of give us some of the highlights. What really stood out to you this spring?
I mean, I think the thing that everybody was kind of looking for was the receivers, because it's just a whole new room. So it's more or less, what we did was we asked five questions before the preseason, Christina Long and I did, and we went back yesterday and just kind of like updated, like, where do we think we're at, the verdict on if those have been answered. And that was one of them, is who's going to stand out at receiver. And I think it was more one of those deals where in the spring you learned your candidates, in the fall you'll learn like who actually can do it. Because it's just in the spring you aren't going to get, you know, somebody can have a phenomenal spring, and then what happens in the fall is completely different. So I think we learned just who some candidates are there. I think that we learned Mike Washington, the New Mexico State transfer running back. He's probably at the top of the room right now. Braylon Russell got some first-team carries too. Rodney Hill's in the mix. But those, I think you learned that he's for real, the New Mexico State transfer. Like, he's going to be one of your guys. What else I think you learned? I'd say right now you did learn where you needed to get players from the portal, definitely in the secondary, definitely along the defensive line, getting another edge rusher, which they did with Phillip Lee from Troy. It was just glaring how much you need to fill up the defense right now, because the numbers just weren't there compared to the offense. But, you know, overall in the spring, I think it was just kind of one of those deals where you're more or less just watching guys go through workouts over and over, and it's hard to completely judge.
Okay, so you mentioned Phillip Lee. They got these four transfers over the weekend. Phillip Lee coming in from Troy. He's a defensive end. A defensive back named Shakur Smalls from Maine. A defensive back named Julian Neal, who you mentioned, from Stanford, came over after the change in their head coach. And then Trent Whalen, was at Kent State in the spring.
After being at Utah.
Southern Utah last year. So, I mean, here's another one.
Well, that's also another interesting situation, because Kenny Burns, the Kent State coach, got fired, and there was like a whole investigation.
There's
some weird situations out there, but yeah, they got those four in. I thought that, you know, you get two defensive backs, which that was just like you got to get some. Like, if you looked at any spot on the defense, it's like you got to get DBs, and then they got a linebacker, which I was thinking that they have the duo of Sori and Steven Dix, who are both, I think, bound to have like big years, and then you have behind them two really good young guys in Bradshaw and Tavion Wallace, who he's an early enrollee freshman. I think that those two are really good. And I was just kind of thinking, like, yeah, you probably just need another body at linebacker, like just one. And I think that's what Trent Whalen is, to be honest. It's like here's a capable guy who can be another body in there. I don't really know how great he is, but, you know, if they bring in somebody in the spring portal, it's to fill what they view as a need. You don't just, like, I think, go, you know, dilly-dallying in the spring and like, oh, look, there's a linebacker. I think you're getting guys at that point that, all right, we need this on our roster for sure. And then, yeah, Phillip Lee, that was kind of you had to also get another DN.
I can't keep up. I can't keep up with all the roster changes in football.
Yeah.
There's so many.
There's a lot. It's a lot to keep up with. I mean, we go through the spring and there's times that I'll, like, see somebody make a tackle, like, oh, for some reason in my head, you were just one of the guys who transferred out last year.
Yeah.
It's just like you forget who transfers out.
Okay, so I wonder if you do this or if it's just me, but I suppose there are other people who do this. I'll be watching a game, so like 2024, and I will see somebody make a tackle, and the first name that comes to my mind, because I see their number, is somebody who played like a year or two or three earlier. Mm-hmm. And there might have been four people who had occupied that number in between the player that I'm thinking about and whoever makes that tackle. I am having as much trouble as I've ever had with football just keeping up with who the personnel is on the field.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, like, with these guys, Phillip Lee from Troy, is he going to be here in 2026? Like, when January rolls around, is he still going to be here? I mean, there's a very good chance that some of these guys who just signed over the weekend, who aren't even on campus yet, they won't get here till probably end of May and get enrolled in time for summer classes. They may be making a 6-month commitment to the program. That's about it.
Well, and I think most of those guys don't even have any more eligibility after that. So I think that, I mean, that's a lot of the vibe in the spring too, I think, is you usually get a lot of guys who are kind of in their last year. But it's, yeah, it's just a very quick fix for your program. I do think, you know, that is one of the helpful things about these spring practices and going through fall camp too, is I get to where, I mean, you watch these guys 14 times and you know the names and numbers pretty dang well. Like, I think by right now I could probably take a quiz on numbers and players and stuff just because of watching it so much. But I mean, it's a process because it's a big roster, a lot of new guys. It's like you genuinely have to watch them a lot to start getting these names and numbers.
6 months would be twice as long as what Madden Iamaleava was on campus, by the way. Yeah. You can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com. Most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports, analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. When we come back, we're going to talk Razorback basketball, the players who have announced they're returning. Also, Ethan will talk some about women's basketball. He keeps up with the women real well, too. But first, another word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They're committed, professional, versatile, been serving their community since 1971. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass. For all your glass market needs with the highest quality products, you can come by and see them at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Arkansas basketball. This is our first chance on our podcast really to talk about all of the announcements that happened late last week. We weren't on the air on Friday. We talked nothing but baseball yesterday. Ethan, a lot of these names that we've been, you know, waiting to see if they're going to come back, they are. You got DJ Wagner coming back. Billy Richmond says that he's coming back. Maybe a little surprising, Trevin Brazil says that he's coming back next season. Carter Knox, still on the fence. He's put his name into the NBA draft. Going to test the waters, so to speak, and see whether or not that's something that he wants to proceed forward with. And if he doesn't, then I would suspect that he'll be back next season. But you've got a core now that was in place or that played this year. You've got a core in place for next season. And that's something that I don't feel like Calipari really had this first year at Arkansas. He had players that he'd been with, you know. I mean, three of them transferred here from Kentucky, and others were committed to play there. But to actually have a core of players who were together in the program where they're playing now, I feel like that can set this program up you know, for success this next season.
Yeah, and the thing is, what they did was they have that core coming back, and then they went, and you see this all the time with coaches. As soon as the portal opens, what do they go get? They go get exactly what was their deficiency last year. Mm. And he went and got a Nick Pringle, who's just going to clean up the glass, great defensive rebounder, strong inside guy, that tough player. And you got Malik Ewan, who is just, I mean, at 6'11", a versatile big guy who can score inside, who can, I mean, you see him move, and he does not move like your normal 6'11 guy. I mean, you got a guy who's an offensive rebounding just stud. He had 9 double-doubles last year at Florida State. He was a high steals guy. He averaged 1.5, like, from February 1st on. I mean, you got a very versatile big guy in Malik Ewan, who that's who people are going to be really excited about, I think. But, yeah, you're bringing those two guys that fill needs that you had last year, and you're sliding them in with a core that already has it down. I had no clue, and I kept on saying this over and over to people. There's all this chatter about DJ Wagner. Is he going to be back? All this stuff. I was like, like as if they're going to like show him the door and say, go transfer. I said, in what world does John Calipari tell his point guard, who, if you watch their season last year, as soon as he got put in that point guard role, they start playing change a lot team. Better. And I'm like, in what world is he going to tell his guy who's been committed to him, who was like the number one prospect or something in his class, like Garcia? No. I was like, why? I did not know where all that chatter came from. I think people are so excited about the two freshmen, Acuff and Thomas, that, I mean, those two will have a role that they, for some reason, I think for some reason people have this thought of like, if you're not, like, people put so much emphasis on the starting lineup. Like, if you're not a for sure starter, you're leaving. Dude, 9-10 people play in a basketball game. Like, and these, there was no world in my head that DJ Wagner was about to leave because he's, yeah, he's just a mainstay on the team, and he's a great defender, too. I just, that one shocked me, but I mean, it was kind of nice to see him be the lead off in that video because it felt like they were trying to make a point like, hey, he's still here.
While I agree with you.
Yeah.
And I didn't think DJ Wagner was going to go anywhere unless he went to the NBA. His dad played for Calipari. And I think there's a real bond, I feel like, between Calipari and some of these players who come in where there's a multi-generational relationship with the coach. So I never thought he was going to leave. I understand why people thought that, because that's what players do.
Yeah.
If they're not playing, they take their bag and they go home or go to a new home. And so I understand why there is that thought. And I think we've talked about this. It's interesting to me that people now feel like they have to have a recommitment from a player for them to come back next season. You're like, used to, Corliss Williamson was a sophomore and now he's going to be a junior. And you didn't think that Corliss Williamson was going to go anywhere else. That may be a bad example because they won a national championship. But you see what I'm saying? And now it's like, I don't know if he's going to be back next year because he hasn't recommitted. He hasn't put out a video on social media that says, hey, I'm back. Some people just don't roll like that.
I really loved, I'm not going to lie, that they did this all in one video, because football season ends and it's just like notifications on for every guy of them saying, I'm running it back, blah, blah, blah. Calipari said, can I get you all to film you for 2 seconds saying, hey, I'm back, and let me put them all together. I'll put it on my social media where I have the biggest reach possible. And in a matter of 45-second video, everybody will know that the roster is back. And I also do think it does benefit Arkansas in this situation. I mean, you have such a reportedly, I mean, you can imagine, healthy NIL budget with these guys. So if you're playing and you're part of the rotation, and I mean, you're not going anywhere in this rotation. I mean, Trevin Brazil is, I would say, probably a starter next year. If he's not a starter, he's definitely like very quick off the bench if you just look at how the roster shakes up. It's like, why would these guys want to leave that unless they, if the NIL situation is great how they want and they're going to be in the mix? It's just, yeah, the only person who ended up leaving in the portal who was a part of the rotation was Vonimir Avisic. And I look at him and he's the one that I'm like, were you going to really be in the rotation a ton next year with who, like, or do you fit who Cal really wants? And he went to go play with his brother. So, you know, it's how the roster shook out. I mean, I think that there's a lot of reason for excitement. I wouldn't blame them if they went out and got one like real sharpshooter from the portal. There was reports about Chad Baker-Mazzara talking with Arkansas, and that quickly got shut down by pretty much everybody on the local beat. It was who was told, you know, they were not recruiting him. But I think it probably would bode well for him to get one more just like knockdown shooter. But other than that, I mean, you got to be really glad, I think, if you're Arkansas with your roster.
Whoever gets Baker-Mazzara becomes the most hated team in America, I feel like.
Yeah.
Almost,
I mean,
almost overnight.
Whenever I saw, I mean, it was Jeff Goodman who said that Arkansas was, it was on the Field of 68 podcast, was like, he had received interest from Arkansas. And all I did was like, my brain instantly went to the technical that Mazzara got with Calipari, like the whatever jeering he did at him or whatever. And I'm like, if there's one thing I know about John Calipari, that's probably not the type of player he's going after. Because he comes back around to like, we have good he loves to have good kids on his team. And I'm like,
he wants team players.
Yeah. And I don't think that he sees that guy do that. And it's like, oh, yeah, cool.
Yeah. And I mean, look, you say whatever you want to about the guys he brought in. But, you know, for the most part, it feels like the guys that he had at Kentucky and, you know, the guys that he's had in his program in the past, they've been team guys. And you can't say that about every McDonald's All-American blue-chip recruit.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure. And I think that that's what happened last year is they learned how to play as a team. They did, it's not that they weren't willing to early. They just couldn't put it together. And then they put it together, and I feel like the adversity that they hit, it just made them start playing even better as a team together once they figured it out. That was honestly, for his first year, I mean, that was a special team he had his first year as far as just, like, how they came from the dumps to the Sweet 16. But, like,
a better team than the final record would show.
Yeah, for sure. But it was a team that I think gets people excited at the idea of that. That's what we're getting at the core of these guys. I mean, you're losing Nelly Davis, who he by the end of the year was playing like the Nelly Davis that everybody expected, and then Jonas Adu, who also by the end of the year was playing how people expected for him. You lose those two, but you retain such a strong nucleus with DJ Wagner, Billy Richmond, Brazil, maybe Carter Knox, and you're adding these two just stud freshmen with Acuff and Thomas, throwing in two like bigs that Phil needs that you had. I just think that there's ample reason for people to be excited.
Well, Pringle, and he's had success in the SEC, and so I think there should be a lot of – he was on a Final Four team in Alabama, right?
Yeah,
and
he was.
And then he goes to South Carolina and he's was good there.
Pretty much the definition of a role player too. Like, he's not going to be your guy that's just filling up the score sheet. Although against Arkansas, when they destroyed Arkansas at South Carolina, he scored the first 6 points of that game, I think finished with 18, and just dominated it. But he's not normally that. He's that player that you're happy with just his rebound production. Malik Ewan, you look at his stats, I mean, against LSU this year, he had 17 and 17. At Miami, 20 and 10. Pitt, 18 and 13. This is a double-double guy who, and a lot of his are, this is the thing, a lot of Ewan's rebounds are offensive. He's a, can just really get his own misses, put it back up and clean up the glass. And then Pringle's a really strong defensive rebounder. I think Ewan can defensive rebound too, but I think you just got two guys who Phil needs that you had last year, because you just, if there's one thing that the last two games that Arkansas played of the season revealed to John Calipari, I'm sure, against St. John's, against Texas Tech, we have to be able to rebound better on the defensive glass, because they got pummeled in those, if they rebound better against Texas Tech, they win that game for sure. I mean, there was a one possession where Texas Tech got six shots. And that was kind of felt like the turning point. I think that's what coaches normally do, is it's very fresh on your mind what kind of was your downfall at the end of a year. And you go and you recruit to fill that need. And I think that's just what they've done.
Am I misreading the room, or does it feel like there's more excitement right now about the next Razorback basketball season than there is about the next Razorback football season?
And
you're talking about a 3 month gap between when one starts and the other.
Yeah, no, I've seen all over, which social media, very small sample size of the general fan population. But whenever you see it over and over, people saying I've seen a lot of people commenting stuff like, just get me to next basketball season, or this is the least excited I've been for a football season in a while, stuff like that. I mean, if you see it over and over, you start paying a little bit of attention to it. But yeah, I think that the way that the basketball season ended and who they have returning, and there's a monster building. I mean, Arkansas basketball has been a big deal. It's always been, but I just think with now Calipari getting him back, another year with Cal and this core and stuff, it's just, you can feel it kind of the giant starting to wake up a little bit, which I mean, it had under Musselman too, as far as if you look at Arkansas, not many other programs have gone to four sweet 16s in the past 5 years. I think Arkansas is one of literally a handful. And you know, I just think that kind of the trajectory of the basketball program, it's Arkansas is getting very relevant again.
It's becoming Kansas around here. You got football season, it might be okay. You might get 6-6, 7-5 bowl team. But basketball, you feel like you have a chance to be a really elite basketball team every year with who they have in charge. And you felt that way with Musselman too.
Yeah.
But you certainly, I think, even feel that way a little bit more. You've taken a step up the ladder with Calipari and the type of high school recruit that he can attract.
I was going to say, Kansas, but throwing a baseball team too.
Kansas got a top 25 baseball team right now.
Well,
they just swept Kansas State.
This
I bet you didn't know that.
Feels like an outlier to me.
Yeah, they might have swept them in front of 600 people.
Yeah, I was going to say this. But, I don't recall any other season that I've even thought about Kansas baseball. Like, they have any? Like, had somebody told me that? Had somebody told me they don't have a baseball team, I would have believed them.
I drove by their baseball stadium. I was in Lawrence. I was coming back from the 2019 College World Series, and that was the one where I-29 had flooded because the Missouri River had spilled out on top of the interstate, and so they rerouted us through Iowa to get over to Omaha. And I mean, that was like a creepy route. I went by some house. I need to look this up, but like there was like this axe murder at this house in the middle of Iowa. That's what this town was known for in the 1800s or something. And so I was like, I'm not going that route again. And so I came back down. I went through Lawrence, stopped on campus, looked at Fog Allen, and went by the baseball stadium. And I mean, it looked like think about a high school baseball stadium, and then maybe add like another set of bleachers, and that's what Kansas baseball stadium looked like. So.
Yeah, but like I said, I would have believed you had just said that they don't field a baseball team. I guess they're in the top 25.
They are in the top 25 right now. They're pretty good. How did we get off on this? I don't know.
Because you were comparing that Arkansas is starting to look a lot like Kansas, and I tried to make the joke that except with the baseball team, and then turns out Kansas does.
You didn't have to relitigate the whole thing.
Well, I was going to remind you.
Let's move on. Kansas, a good segue. Yvette Mayberry has transferred to Arkansas women's basketball. Where are they right now under Musick in trying to assemble a roster? Because it feels like outside of Mayberry and a couple of players that have transferred in from her ORU team, we haven't heard a whole lot. But you know, based on what we saw this last year, they've got a real need to upgrade that roster.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, this is what everybody's going to have to realize with year one of the Musick tenure is, I mean, they're just trying to get back on track as far as like, You go from a program record in losses, and you're trying to just get a roster that can, I think, compete and show future prospects what this can be. And I mean, I'm not expecting much of this first year. I'm really not. But I do think that she's recruiting players that fit her style and what she wants her program, like the character of it to be. Like, she's recruiting gritty players who are going to, I think, be high energy and effort. Yvette Mayberry is going to be, I think people will notice pretty immediately, a really good on-ball defender. Something that I don't know how many just great on-ball defenders they've had over the past years. Michaela Daniels was good. But I think that people will notice that with her pretty quick. Talia Jones, I think I mispronounced her first name. But she's coming from ORU with her, and she's averaged like 18 a game. Yvette Mayberry averaged 10. So you're getting some scoring, but it's just a roster that I think right now that, it's going to definitely be a, you know, year one, just trying to kind of set a tone of what the future might look like. Although the SEC is hard. It's hard to rebuild. And I don't know that they have a roster right now that's going to win a whole lot of games, but they do have a roster, I think, that's going to fit a lot of her characteristics of what she's looking for.
You think defense is emphasized in the Mayberry house?
Oh, I would say so.
Yeah.
I would guess. Yeah. But it's just, I remember watching them play Kansas in the WNIT at Fog Allen, since all roads are leading back to Kansas today.
Following the Yellow Brick Road.
And I instantly, that's what stood out was her defense. She was just a really good defender. And she can score too, though. Like, they don't win their NCAA tournament game against Michigan 2 years ago without her scoring. So I think she's, more than anything, I think experience is, it's hard to put a price tag on that for your first team if you can get a player or two in who just bring a lot of experience to a roster.
And they've signed Emily Robinson, too, who was at ORU and was the conference newcomer of the year a couple of years back.
Yeah, and she scored a lot against Arkansas, too. Her, Jones, and Oglesby from ORU all had, like, if they didn't score 20, it was right around 20 when they played Arkansas. So.
I guess my question is, are you surprised that there haven't been more commitments to this point?
Yeah, they have a center coming in from a JUCO transfer from Arizona, trying to learn more about her. But she, all I know is she was getting recruited by Mississippi State as well, maybe another high major. But they're going to need, they're right now, I think, at 12. And I would be surprised if they don't get to, you know, at least 14. So I'd assume they'll add a couple more. And I would think you need to get another big and then maybe two bigs, maybe another guard. But I don't think they're done yet.
baseball in action tonight. Arkansas going to take on Little Rock over at Baumwalker Stadium. Going to be a 6:30 first pitch. Tate McGuire going to be on the mound for the Razorbacks. Mentioned this yesterday, Ethan. Baseball, they've got this little run here of teams that when you look at their record, I don't know that they stand out to you a whole lot, but you kind of dig in a little bit and you see what they've been doing lately, which I think is a pretty good indicator of in baseball. You know, I put in all of our stories what they've done in their last 10 games. And Little Rock 8-2 in their last 10. They had had an 8-game winning streak that got snapped Sunday. So they went into Ole Miss and they won last week on a Tuesday. This is a very interesting game, or two games, today and tomorrow.
Yeah, and it's, you know, the midweek is the one that you get to make your own rules for, I feel like, where if you lose it, not a big deal. It's the midweek, but if you win it, you like, if you're like a UALR and you win one, heck yeah, you celebrate it.
Well, you know, like when Little Rock beat Arkansas up here in 2019, Chris Curry had the lineup card given to him. Like somebody got, I don't know how exactly this happened, but somebody got a hold of the lineup card, they framed it, and then they gave it to Chris Curry as a gift. And it's on the wall in the Little Rock clubhouse as a reminder to the players that, hey, look, if you do everything right, you can have this kind of result. So, yeah, it's a huge deal for them if they win. If they don't win, it's kind of like, we were looking ahead toward the weekend and we didn't want to burn everybody out.
Yeah, and that's about how it goes on the midweek. I mean, that Missouri State game, was it Missouri State?
That Arkansas lost this
year? Yes, it feels like a lifetime ago to me. Yes. It's like,
they go back up there next week.
Yeah, it's one of those where I'm like, yeah.
This was a quote from Curry yesterday. He said, quote, absolutely, we want to win every game we play. So does Arkansas. But you've got to keep your wits about you and keep one eye on the weekend and make sure you don't burn up your pitching staff or put anybody in a position to not be able to perform on the weekend. Little Rock has a big weekend series upcoming at Gary Hogan Field this weekend against SIUE. And that's the team that's leading their conference. So yeah.
I would assume in a week like that for a team that like has a legitimate chance to make some noise in your conference that you are very focused on keeping your your pitching good for your conference series. I could see where if you know you're playing a team that is just terrible and you should be able to beat even without one of your like normal starters starting where you pitch them in the, you know, midweek because it's a big game. But I just think whenever you have a big conference series, yeah, it doesn't make much sense to not put your eggs more in that basket.
They're going to throw one of their long relievers on the weekend, Zach Busick, this evening at Baum Stadium. And Chris told me that he might be used more in an opener role, which is how he was used last week against Ole Miss. So wholehogsports.com this evening for all of our coverage from Arkansas and Little Rock baseball. We'll be back with another podcast tomorrow. Hope to see you then or on our website. Have a great day, everybody.